You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Continuing down our path of 25 years of reflection on Ravens history, and we've been enjoying this series a lot here. Joining me today for a really interesting one, this on Ed Reed's strong safeties, who played next to him. And it's a relatively small set, surprisingly. Joining me today is Wola Odeniran. Wola, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, Ken? How are you?
I've got no complaints at all, and this is a cool topic. Always love to talk about safeties. So we had a previous episode where we talked about a lot of the cheap dime backs, but this is really the strong safety position next to Ed Reed. Ed Reed, that classic center fielder.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Looking back, we had back in 2002 when it started with Will Demps, and into through the end of the 2005 season with him, and then 2006 when they drafted DeJuan Landry, I believe, in the fourth round, fifth round. Yep, and arguably his best year of his career in Rex Ryan's defense, the second year of Rex Ryan's defense. So, and then all that through the transition to 2010. And then after that, from the 2011, 2012 season, the Super Bowl run, we had Bernard Pollard, who was that real nice enforcer on the back end, cleaning things up for Ed during his final time here in the Super Bowl run. So it's definitely like all three of those safeties had a nice build and being an enforcer, but you know they definitely complimented Reed well.
Yeah, I one of the things that I hear a lot today is that a pair of safeties on the back end, a free safety strong safety combo, is versatile. And immediately, I look at that with a jaundiced eye, because it usually means you don't have a true free safety. It means you have two strong safeties, and then they're versatile. Then they can be, either one can play either position just as well. It's not what you want. You want to have a center fielder on the back end. I think the Ravens have really been looking very hard for that since Reed left. They maybe had it with Weddle for a little bit. But otherwise, they've been lacking in that free safety.
Yeah, and even currently now, if you want to relate to the present tense, you know, Deshaun Elliott and Clark, they do a really good job, really smart players. They also, and Wink Martindale does a lot of things with them, bringing them both to the line of scrimmage and blitzing off the edge. So it's kind of, in a way, it can kind of help in the sense, like, since they're not natural free safeties, like, there could be a chance for the opposing offenses not to know, like, who is coming naturally, because you can do a little bit of both. So they could provide that kind of disguise. But as you said, like looking for that natural free safety, that free range to give Wink Martindale that ability to be even more flexible with his game and be even more chaotic is something that they're still searching for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I even find it to be more important on the team that's constructed the way this one is. When you have inside linebackers who aren't the best at knowing what's going on behind them, mm-hmm. I'm being very charitable with that comment. Mm-hmm. You really need to have a free safety on the back end who's lurking and is a real presence to make the other quarterback fear. With right. Earl Thomas, they did kind of had that very briefly.
Yeah.
If you look at the heat maps of where the quarterbacks were throwing in Seattle when he was in Seattle.
Yeah, and he did some good things with the Ravens. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, and you know that's kind of like what put them in this logjam right now. None of us knew that Earl Thomas would have the issues he had, and then the team would decide to move on from him. So it kind of set things back a little bit. But given the circumstances, I don't think you could ask a whole lot more from the Ravens' perspective because they did an admirable job of, you know, replacing him with Deshaun Elliott coming and being drafted in the sixth round and stepping in the way he did. And, you know, he's up for a contract year. And unfortunately, with this season ending injury, I still think he's a really good cog in the Ravens defense. Hopefully they can re-sign him.
Mm-hmm. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
But he's a candidate, I think, for a one-year deal. At this point, I think it's unlikely he's going to get a big multi-year deal from some team after three or four injured years, even though he's played well. Mm-hmm. But if on a one-year prove-it deal with the Ravens, maybe he gets it going again. A lot of players have gone through that. I look back at Dwan Edwards, who played a long time in this league.
Yeah.
He basically played his entire first contract plus an extra year with the Ravens, and mm-hmm. The Ravens did not get value from his draft years.
They did, yeah. He was drafted in the second round, I believe in the 2004 draft, and he kind of stayed in the back end. He was like a rotational player, and then the Ravens luckily got Haloti Ngata in the sixth, mm-hmm. In the first round in the 2006 draft, so it kind of helped take the pressure off him a little bit. Yeah, the funny thing about Dwan Edwards was like he kind of came on like later,
yep.
at the end of his run, because he did some things. Like in the 2009 season,
exactly.
I believe he scored a touchdown in week four against the Patriots that year. Fell on a fumble. Yeah, so he did some nice things towards the end, but you know, they're able to manage, I guess, a little bit in that regard.
Let's go back and talk about who Ed Reed's actually been paired with, because the mm-hmm. first you mentioned already is Will Demps, mm-hmm. UDFA. Came to camp in 2002. Obviously, the Ravens have had tremendous success with undrafted free agents. The mm-hmm. Ravens did have other players, including Anthony Mitchell, who played the back end in 2001.
And
I'm trying to remember exactly how much time he played, but Will Demps took that starting job away from him effectively.
Yeah.
And he didn't give it up for several years.
Yeah, and you know, he's in 2002, he started 10 games that year, and he played in 14. And, you know, he had one interception, a seven pass defense, a fumble, forced fumble. When he first came on, like he was like it was kind of for my young eyes, it was kind of like it felt like he had a natural feel for playing in college because wherever even though that defense was really young, I believe at the time the Ravens had the youngest roster in NFL history. Mm-hmm. So he made some flash splash plays back there, and then my most memorable thing about him in his early run was that 2003 playoff game against the Titans where he picked it off and ran it back, and I was like, wow, that like at that point, given the fact that Ed Reed also had an interception that same game, you're looking at it like, wow, the Ravens have a young defense with a prime Ray Lewis, and like those guys on the back end are going to be a force for years to come. And so from there, go ahead.
I just want to talk about Demps, and additionally is that a lot of people forget that Ed Reed came into this league as a strong safety.
Yes.
And so he won the 2004 Defensive Player of the Year as a strong safety. So it gets a little murky. And if you've got a good, you know, coach, and Mike Nolan was the defensive coordinator for the Ravens in these years, there is, you know, you can use safety somewhat versatilely, but, and Reed certainly still had a bunch of picks during this era, but Will Demps was technically the free safety.
Yeah, that was an interesting part too, and you know, it's kind of, I guess, touching on Ed Reed a little bit too, is like back then when he was facing the elite quarterbacks, like you could kind of tell like they were kind of fool him a little bit, like when they were going up against the Patriots in 2004 and that rainy game. I believe Ed Reed almost got a pick, I think, on Tom Brady, but Brady was able to look him off a little bit, and you know, and they were able to drive down, but. You know, over the, you kind of noticed it in 2005 as well when Peyton Manning, even in the 2004 regular season, when Peyton Manning was going for his, I think the season's regular touchdown season record. Touchdown record. And, you know, he was able to look off Ed Reed and avoid his side. But towards the 2006 season, you know, they couldn't really avoid him that much anymore. And Reed displayed that in the playoff game against Manning, picking him off twice. So I felt like, with Ed Reed, the interesting part is like, even though he won Defensive Player of the Year in 2004, you see he felt like a little green. But towards like 2006, especially the 2006 to 2009, is like where he really reached his like peak years. He felt like it was like very unavoidable player for opposing quarterbacks.
Yeah, I thought. He kind of filled his full potential when he moved to free safety, in my opinion. The 2008 season is one of the greatest defensive seasons of all time.
Yeah.
And as great as he was in 2004, a lot of that was as a center fielder. And most of that season, he had 358 yards of return yards.
Yeah.
It was mostly about those returns and how spectacular they were that he won the DPOY. But I thought he deserved it in 2008.
Yeah, me too. Harrison was very deserving as well for the award, but I definitely felt like Reed got robbed. I felt like if the award was awarded through the Super Bowl, Ed Reed probably maybe won it, but you know, it probably would have been still really close with Harrison's interception return in that Super Bowl as well. So, but yeah, that was a really crazy game because every game you felt like there was a vibe Ed Reed's going to pick at least one. He's going to take it to the house one day. So.
Let's move on. And so we're going to change eras here. So we got Will Demps providing the back end for 4 years there. And then the Ravens go out and they don't have a strong safety. So they know Demps is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the only guy they have is this guy, Dwan Landry. They draft in the fifth round. And how did the Ravens know he'd be the guy?
Beats me. At that time, with the Ravens, especially like when you pair guys with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, it sometimes gives the players around them a cushion to be free and not too much pressure on them to, you know, step up and be the immediate leader like some other teams would be when they're drafted. And you know, for him, during that time period of where the NFL was, like he was the perfect complement to Reed. Mm-hmm. He had enough coverage skills, and he had enough force as a tackler. So where it felt like almost as big as a linebacker to a degree, where he would be able to step in and stop the run. And the most impressive thing about Dwan Landry stepping in the way he did was his intelligence. A really smart player, you know, stepping into that very confusing Rex Ryan defense where you have so many players coming and going, so many, whether you're running like a 4-2, you're running a 4-2-5 defense, a 3-4, you morph into a 46.
Yeah, I have to tell this story because this is one of my favorite parts about Ryan's 2005 defense. So that team obviously was going nowhere. Kyle Bowler was a quarterback. They lost a bunch of games, had no offense, couldn't get anything going really offensively. That really triggered the McNair era in 06. But the 05 defense was still really special. And the guy who made it special was Dalis Thomas, who was effectively one of the guys who played strong safety next to Ed Reed because they played 265 snaps in 2005 with only three defensive backs.
Right. And
it's incredible.
Right. And it's still that year, I believe Baltimore's defense ranked fifth in the league and they only allowed like 299 yards a game. So Adalius Thomas is like one of him and Peter Bulwer to a degree are like, I feel like they don't get enough credit for what they were for the Ravens defense over those years. What Adalius Thomas was able to do, like lining up at nickel, like when you think about that right now, that is crazy. Because yeah. like you never really, because like in today's NFL, even with this passing league, you don't see linebackers being able to play nickel like that. And you could play him anywhere, inside linebacker, outside linebacker, put him as a defensive end on obvious passing down situations. You know, it's just, it's so unique. And like he himself that year in 2006 deserved the Defensive Player of the Year award. Yes. Jason Taylor was a great player. He won it that year, I believe, for the Dolphins. But Adalius Thomas deserved his credit. And, you know, I felt like when he went to New England, Bill Belichick didn't maximize his full talent as much as he did. As much as he could have been doing it in Baltimore. So it was unfortunate, but awesome player. Awesome player for the Ravens.
Could add a couple more years in Baltimore, certainly. He only really had one really good year for the Patriots. That first year in 07, he was still a hell of a player, and then he kind of was in decline. And that just tells you the normal aging curve. You got to be really cognizant of that.
Right.
He's an unbelievable coverage player those early years, including 2005. You could definitely slap him on any tight end. He was way too big for a slot receiver, so you could get knocked way off his route during that. But he also put his hand in the dirt on third down.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd be in there on the four-man front, and he'd be, you know, in a down lineman stance.
That year in 2006, man, like they had – I believe they had 61 sacks that year, number one in points allowed, number one in yards allowed. Imagine him on the defensive line with Haloti Ngata and Trevor Price. That was something. I miss those days.
And Bart Scott had a huge year. And Terrell Suggs, of course, was still there and had a huge year. So it was four guys having 9-plus sacks that year, as I recall it. But that was just outrageous. But a lot of that was driven from the middle. It was driven in large part by Price, in my estimation.
But,
And it's funny because the 14 team, which is the other big sack year the Ravens had with 56, Dumervil and Suggs get all the credit, but to me, Pernell McPhee drove the pass rush from the inside that year.
Yes. And, you know, and he's still doing a little bit of that too this year as well, the last couple of years. You know, he's always been someone. Back in the 2011 season, thing about McPhee a little bit, I remember he saved a game-winning drive against the Bengals where he sacked Andy Dalton. I guess it was like on fourth down and the Bengals were driving inside the Ravens red zone. And I think that was a game where Ray Lewis was out with an injury for those two games where they were playing the 49ers and the Bengals. And he did a great job. He's always been a really underrated interior pass rusher. And he was someone that I think the Ravens missed pretty much during 2015, 2016 when he moved on.
Yeah. They couldn't afford him, but right. They definitely missed him. It was a shame. Let's go back. I don't want to take us too far off track, but I love this organic conversation. Let's go back to Landry for a second, because one of the things, even in his rookie year, that he could do to help bring Ryan's defense and his scheming to a different level was Landry was perfectly able to drop in coverage for an outside corner, which allowed Ryan to run more outside blitzes than he ever did in that year. And it's never a lot. So it's often like two in a year, one in a year you'll see from a team. Mm-hmm. They did it like nine times that year, and Samari Roll actually sacked Michael Vick in a game.
It's just for what DeJuan Landry was able to do. I just again from like the intelligence standpoint, like as a rookie guy, I feel like we talk about that like in a vague sense, like people don't really, the average football fan may not really realize like when you're stepping in that much as a rookie and you're coming into that defense with what Rex Ryan is able to do, because there are veterans in the league who have played on Rex Ryan's defense. Even when you look back when he was coaching the Buffalo Bills in the latter stages of the New York Jets, there are veterans who just didn't really get it any, but DeJuan Landry, when he got in the league, he just got it. So you know, from that standpoint, and you know, stopping the run, the way he did, you know, a very sound tackler. And he offered places where, you know, Ed Reed may have lacked a little bit, like maybe due to injury with some tackling. Like he covered up a lot of that for him over the course of his career. So it was definitely a perfect conflict. Ed Reed didn't have to worry about, I guess, not laying the blow too much and leave that to DeJuan Landry. So as good a compliment as you could find over those 2-3 season stretch. And then over the course, I guess, towards the end of the 2010 season, like he's still a solid player, but like it started to get a feel like the Ravens needed an extra boost towards the end. So they had to move on from him and he got his contract somewhere else. So, and then that transitioned over to Bernard Pollard.
Yeah, Bernard Pollard, of course, we know him for personal fouls probably more than anything in Baltimore, but he wasn't flagged for a very big one in the playoff game at New England and that sent the Ravens to the Super Bowl in 2012.
Yeah,
when he went ahead at Ridley, right?
Ridley, and that fumble that made him do the split.
Well, he was out before he hit the ground. That's for sure. And that ball was just kind of rolling free.
And when we talk about an enforcer, like who more than that in the past couple of years, like, oh, I guess me in the past, like recent memory than Bernard Pollard, you know, he was, I guess, between all the main safeties that Ed Reed played around, he probably had maybe the weakest in coverage, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
There. So, but he was definitely someone. He was definitely someone who made up for it with his physicality and someone who made it up with, you know, with his presence, I guess, in the locker room to a degree. And, you know, and from a leadership perspective, you know, being that extra voice and keeping that Ravens mentality on the field of, you know, just keeping everyone on edge and what you should expect and what goals the defense has, you know, I think they definitely had some, you know, I guess controversial stuff going on in the locker room a little bit, but he was definitely someone who provided that vocal support, but also knowledge with the defense under Dean Pease and during that Super Bowl run too.
So Pollard has had a falling out, obviously, with the Ravens since he left. Has nothing nice to say about the team when you hear him talk. It's kind of a shame because I think he probably has to look back on the 2012 season as, you know, one of the high points of his career, if not the high point of his career.
Yeah,
it's surprising to me. That you got it, but I guess, you know, Dilfer was a little bitter after after the Ravens let him go. But when I've seen him at autograph shows and whatnot, he is the classiest dude you'll ever see,
right,
in terms of putting his ring on fingers, kids of a finger to take a picture and doing stuff like that. I mean, just I could never see Bernard Pollard, you know, acting that way.
I mean, it is disappointing, you know, when you win a Super Bowl and you go through that grind, especially the way the Ravens lost that opportunity to go to Super Bowl in the 2011. AFC Championship game, you know, maybe later on he'll reflect a little bit, but I think, you know, it's just a little petty, but yeah, you know.
I'm not expecting a Bernard Pollard day in Baltimore anytime in the remainder of his lifetime, but we'll see. It's, you know, one thing they did that was kind of cool when the Orioles finally shut down Memorial Stadium, they brought back all the players for this Field of Dreams things where they just could get everybody that wanted to be, they were invited. Right. Mm-hmm. And they ran out on the field at their old position. And that was just the coolest thing.
That's cool. And the Ravens do a great job of bringing the old players back, making sure that they feel welcome and they're not forgotten. Because, you know, when you're looking at a lot of teams back in the league, they don't really do that. They don't really embrace them like they should. And sometimes when they do, it's normally the Hall of Fame level players coming back for a ceremony. But the Ravens do take it a little bit extra. They bring back the guys that are really core cogs in their organization, bringing back guys like Jared Johnson and things like that. So, you know, they definitely, when players around the league come to Baltimore and they say, you know, what, it's a great organization and it feels like home and everyone treats you the same and you're able to be yourself, it really does hit home because it really shows on and off the field.
Yeah, it shows up in so many ways about this organization. They really get it. You know, one of the things I was noticing was there was a woman handing out, it might have been birthday boxes or activity boxes for kids. And first of all, her badge said, I think it was Kelly, and it said, or maybe it was Megan, I forget, it might have been Kelly, to drafted in 2011. That was what I got. And it's like, that's the way you want to think about it. And then she's handing out these boxes, and you know, I just see the kid open the box, and you know, his face lights up, and he's, you know, got something to do, and I'm thinking the parents got to be very happy with that. So now they don't have to entertain this kid for 3 hours, you know, while, you know, if he gets upset with the ball game taking too long. It just, the organization completely gets it in terms of what that fan dynamic is and how to make that fan experience work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All around.
All right. Well, it's such a pleasure to talk football with you and have you on the show. Great topic, by the way. And just what we're looking for on this show. It's narrow enough that we can discuss it in about 20 minutes. And we got into some good depth on these players. And I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Ken. I really appreciate it. Glad to have you on. And I look forward to it later.
All right. You can talk football on Twitter with you? And do you have any kind of new product you're working on or considering?
Right now, not really. You can follow me on Twitter at Walla Ryder. That's where you can follow me. Right now I am working on video games, 3D video games from scratch. So
fun.
Yeah, you can see it on my main page, on my Twitter page when you click on it. I'm gonna click on my profile. So yeah.
Very cool. Is this a virtual reality thing?
Yep, computer video game.
All right. If you have an idea for a 25 years pod and you'd like to get to me, just send me a DM on Twitter. They're open for me, and I'll get back to you very quickly. We'll get you on air. We only have about 10 more to do, so we're losing an opportunity, but there'll be other series during the off season. So hit me up. Awesome. Wola, thanks again for being on.
Thank you, Ken. Really appreciate it.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.